Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Living with Multiple Myeloma. This is a two-part series, and today's workshop is going to focus on coping with the stresses of caregiving when your loved one has multiple myeloma. So this is for people to just think about some of the stresses that they experience and to kind of figure out some tips and ways to cope with that. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 800 participants, and you come from all over the United States, from all different regions and parts of the United States, and we also have international participants from Australia, Canada, India, Ireland, the Netherlands, United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So this is a bit of a global call, and we appreciate that you're all spending the next hour with us to learn more about this topic. This activity was made possible by Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and the educational donation provided by Amgen. I really want to thank them for their support and also for the industry collaboration in making today's program possible. Now, I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers and all those collaborating organizations that are really a resource to each of you to use. They all offer free services, and they all offer different services. So in those moments when you're having a difficult time, there are resources for you to be aware of and to help to cut through some of the kind of feelings of loneliness that you may have because you have places that you can call for additional help. We also did provide an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete that evaluation form. I have to say that your feedback really helps us to better plan these programs. Without your feedback, we might come up with topics, but we wouldn't know that they're the ones that you want us to offer. Indeed, this two-part series is one that many of you have asked for, the first part being a real focus on multiple myeloma and the second being a focus on the needs of caregivers. So please tell us what you'd like us to do. We're planning many programs for this year, and your input really makes the programs more relevant and most relevant to meet your needs. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I'm going to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Andrew Yi, and Dr. Yi is instructor in medicine, Harvard Medical School, Center for Multiple Myeloma, Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center. And Dr. Yi is going to address, really provide an overview of multiple myeloma and also talk a bit about reducing complications of bone disease. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Yi.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn, for inviting me to speak about multiple myeloma, and thanks for organizing this teleconference, since it covers some really very important topics and how important it is to have caregiving in terms of taking care of helping to make sure that our patients get the best possible care. And as many of you may know already, multiple myeloma is a cancer of a type of white blood cell called the plasma cells. And there are different types of white blood cell cancers that you may already be aware of, like leukemia and lymphoma. And multiple myeloma is one of those type of white blood cell cancers. But in the case of myeloma, it involves a particular type of white blood cell, the plasma cell. And this cancer, when it affects the plasma cells, it affects primarily the bone marrow. And as a result, there can be several, patients can have several symptoms related to to the bone marrow involvement. And this can include anemia, which can cause fatigue, or kidney problems, or problems involving the bone, which may lead to fractures, or elevated calcium from increased turnover of the bone. Now, I think what makes part of the reason why I decided to focus on multiple myeloma is that the treatments for multiple myeloma have become so much more effective over the past, you know, years and decades. I think the treatments over these years, not only have they become much more effective, they're also better tolerated as well, as we're learning to figure out the best ways to give these medications in terms of minimizing their side effects and maximizing the benefit. And I think part to make sure that, you know, these treatments are as effective as possible, it's also really important that we have good supportive care involved as well. And part of this, when I think of supportive care, I think of management of some of the bone-related complications that can occur for patients that, you know, at time of diagnosis or over the course of treatment, since bone involvement is one of the main hallmarks of this disease. And in addition to the treatments that we use for myeloma, such as an immunomodulatory drug such as like lenalidomide, or a proteasome inhibitor such as like bortezomib, which I know many of the audience may already be familiar with, we also use bisphosphonates. And these bisphosphonates are medications which help strengthen the bone. And they're related to medications that you may already be aware of, such as medications that people use for osteoporosis, such as alendronate, also known as Fosamax, for example. And these bisphosphonates are actually much more potent forms of it, and we give them intravenously. And so they're medications such as like Zometa, also known as zoledronic acid, or Aredia, also known as the generic name is pimidronate. And we found that over the years that when you give these medications, it significantly reduces the frequency of, you know, risk of fracture, or elevated calcium, or say need for surgery down the road. And in addition to preventing fractures, these medications can also also help treat bone-related pain. Since I know that for many patients, pain from these bony-related complications can be, and, you know, it can be a real serious challenge when in treating this disease. I think now moving in the future, in terms of these medications are traditionally given about once a month for the first 1 to 2 years. And I think in the future, looking forward, we're trying to figure out the best way in terms of the frequency of giving these medications. I think traditionally we've been giving it once a month for about, say, the first 1 to 2 years. But I think we're starting to appreciate that perhaps you may not need to give them as frequently. So there is an emerging practice where we're tending to giving, instead of once a month, say once every 3 months, once the disease has reached a stable point. And I think this is an area of active research. I think, but at this point, I would like to turn to more of the attention of the caregiving side. And I really wanted to emphasize, you know, how vital and important it is for the role that caregivers play in terms of helping us take the best possible care of your loved one or friend or family member. And I think when you have, with this disease, people are definitely living longer and living better. And I think having, you know, adequate support is an essential component to helping people live longer and live better. Since, you know, the disease, it can be very complicated, and, you know, for patients they can face, you know, many ups and downs with this over the course of their treatment. And I think having, you know, a vital source of support really helps smooth the way forward towards having the best possible outcome. So again, I'm really very appreciative of this conference for emphasizing this. And I think at this point, maybe Carol would like to turn it over to our next speaker.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Yee, for that really wonderful introduction, really setting the stage for the program, both in terms of multiple myeloma and also stressing the importance of caregivers and their role. And indeed, our next speaker is Dr. Barbara Given. Dr. Given is University Distinguished Professor, Associate Dean for Research and Doctoral Program, College of Nursing, Michigan State University. And Dr. Given is going to address caring for your loved one with multiple myeloma, taking on the role of caregiving, and your important role in decision making. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Given.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody who is participating. I have sort of as a mission in life to make sure that professionals appreciate the value that family caregivers contribute to the care. So I think it is important to know and to think and to stop and realize that the caregivers are the heart and soul of the care that cancer patients get. So even though those of us who are professionals believe that our role is critical, we have a very short role and a short time period because in virtually every caregiver study that has been carried out, family members are involved about 80% of the time, 24/7, 365, for a period of time that patients are being treated, and then as they go through the various stages from diagnosis to treatment to the period of time where the disease is in control to the point of potential progression of disease into survivorship, and then for those who do not respond to treatment into palliative care and end of life is the family member who is around all of that period of time. And some of the studies that the federal government has done about the involvement of family caregivers during cancer treatment, they have said for many months, over a four-year period, 14 to 24 months during active treatment, and in the active treatment phase, maybe being involved 8.8 hours per day, meaning a full-time job, and then diminishing as the patient gets into a maintenance or into disease control. So they clearly, caregivers are clearly an extension of the professionals and the workforce that we have, and we have to keep reminding ourselves to depend on the value and the contributions and the support at, that has been pointed out already. And so the family members, to many, are hidden and invisible as healthcare professionals, and I believe they are a healthcare professional and a member of the team, and they are critical to the success of the patient's cancer experience. So what do they do? You probably know, many of you are very involved. You've already heard about the importance for medication, participating in providing support for the medications for bone enhancement, the medications and dispensing, acquisition of medications and dispensing. Now a lot of the medications that we're using come from specialty pharmacies, so the family members are involved with that. We're always worried about the nutrition and the eating for patients who have side effects from treatment, so involved in nutrition, providing emotional support. The studies with family caregivers certainly indicate that very often they are as depressed or anxious as the patient, if not more, and there are key phases in the trajectory of illness where caregivers really are more emotionally distressed than our patients. They are very involved in the coordination of care, organizing appointments, running here, running there, making sure all the appointments are met. And in today's complicated healthcare system, very involved with the coordination of care. So family members are there as they're worrying about communication with the providers. One of the things I think that is so important for family members to be able to control some of the uncertainty that surrounds the care is to find at least one professional in the patient's care that you can talk with about anything, and that that person is going to be available and that you know that you can talk to them and raise issues. And I think that's one of the early points to happen, is that you find someone that you can talk with. As we take on the role in cancer, often this happens unplanned. And so the diagnosis is sudden, and it appears that one becomes a caregiver just It just happens, and there is not really any plan. As such, then, that means that family members often are not prepared to care. And unfortunately, the healthcare system is not very good at providing either classes or guidance or whatever for family members. There are a few cancer centers around who have programs for caregivers, but for the most part, our caregivers indicate that it's a trial and error, and this provider gives them this kind of information, this provider gives them that kind of information, sometimes in conflict. So what we really need is one place and one area where a professional will be available to help. It might be a nurse practitioner, it might be a social worker, it could be a physician, but very often there's a person available by call for family members to call, and often it's a nurse practitioner or a social work. And I think it's important early on, if it's possible, to ask for family meetings where family members and the professionals can meet and talk about the care for the patient and the expected trajectory and the expected things that are going to happen. Because sometimes individuals take on care and think that it's going to be something that's going to last for 4 or 6 weeks, and it ends up going into months and even longer than that. And I think caregivers need to know that so that they don't feel trapped in their situation, especially if it's a sibling or adult child that gets involved in care for a parent. Sometimes it is the adult daughter that becomes, by default, the caregiver without any thought about it or even thinking about how other members of the family can participate. Roles change over time. So in a trajectory of care and illness, there are intense periods of time when family members are involved in care and more intensely, and then there are times when there is very little care, and then there may be exacerbations when there is more intense care. And what our caregivers tell us is that they need different kind of support from the professionals, and they need different kinds of support from friends and family, depending on whether they're in treatment, whether they're at a point of disease progression, or whether they might be in a survivorship period. Even when care seems to be, or the treatment seems to be at a maintenance period where there's not a lot happening, what our caregivers talk about is having a letdown, because now they're afraid that something is going to happen and they don't know what they should be doing because there's not a lot of direct care, a lot of activities or hands-on kinds of things to do, maybe not a lot of even scheduling to do, but what is it they're supposed to do because they've been involved maybe for a couple years or for an intense period of time. And so that period is a time for asking for help and support from us too, because I think we need to make sure that caregivers are supported. So it's important to let go of the role that you take on and not hover, even though you may have fears about recurrence or what's to happen next. And we need to help you at those transition points. And again, asking a nurse or a physician or a social worker is really important as those changes occur. I think it's important to know, do you have enough information to provide care? What information do you really need? Who has the information that you need? Is it the surgeon? Is it the medical oncologist? Who is it that, is it the nurse? Is it the social work? And make sure that you get the information that you need. Make sure that you have some idea of what is an expected side effect versus one that is unexpected. I had someone tell me yesterday that when a patient developed a skin rash, on the medication they were on, and it was an oral agent, where a skin rash is expected, and a skin rash means the body is reacting to the medication in a positive way. The patient stopped taking the med because neither the patient nor the family member knew that it was an expected result. So I think it's important to just ask questions and know that you should be asking questions. I think also stop for a minute and look at what you do and then know that you are doing a good job. You're doing the best job that you can. You are probably helping the patient more than any of the rest of us. You probably will be helping the patient to have a positive outcome or as a positive outcome with as much comfort as they can. And so feel good about what you're doing because you are the glue that really helps the patient get through this period of time. So don't forget to take care of yourself. Don't forget to do health maintenance. By that I mean to do your walks, to eat appropriately, to have relaxation, to run, to walk, to ride bike, to swim, to visit friends, to have respite, to just have a change, but to always know that you are making a positive contribution to the patient and you are important to our care because we could not do what we do without someone being the glue to hold it all together. And I think the last thing I would point out is make sure that the professionals include you as a part of the plan of the care for the patient. Because we know from the information that we have that providers or professionals, doctors, nurses, social workers, and everybody need to have the right answer of what's really happening to the patient. And so it's the patient reporting their symptom side effects, maybe pain or rash or whatever else they have. But we need that verified with family members, too, because we have a way of not being in congruence with what the patient has more than it's possible. So we need family members. So remember, your role is critical to the decision-making for patient care.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Gibbon. That was wonderful, actually, and such wonderful kind of information for all the caregivers on the line to sit up and feel really good about themselves and to really know that they're making a critically important they play such an important role. Thank you for your words. I think they'll stay with people for quite some time, so thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Lupe Palos. And Dr. Palos is Clinical Research Manager, Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Palos is a nurse, a social worker, and a doctor of public health, and she is going to address challenges in communicating with the healthcare team, coping with each day on special occasions, birthdays, and holidays, and managing family and friends. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Carolyn, for the opportunity to be involved in this discussion. It's a very important topic, and when we're speaking about significant celebrations or occasions or holidays, it becomes a topic that affects not only the patient, but the entire family, the caregiver, and at times even the healthcare team. Dr. Yi helped us to better understand the medical aspect of multiple myeloma and its impact on the patient's body and function. And Dr. Gibbon linked the medical and the physical aspect of this disease to discuss the impact of that interaction on the patient, their caregiver, the family, and the healthcare team. She gave us valuable insight into the complex world of caregiving and reminded us about the importance of making informed and shared decision-making. After carefully listening to both of my colleagues, I was reminded that being a caregiver with a loved one diagnosed with multiple myeloma is a distinctly unique experience. Caring for someone with this disease is different because of certain characteristics associated with, I'm going to call it MM, multiple myeloma, and I will touch on three of those characteristics now. The first is that this disease is a chronic disease. It has its ups and downs, like we heard both of our previous speakers talk about. Second, the treatments range and include chemotherapy, radiation, non-chemo medications, and even stem cell transplantation at times, each with its own set of symptoms to manage. And third, the late effects and or the symptoms such as fatigue, lower immune system, the neuropathic or the bone pain, and the others have a significant impact on the patient's physical and mental functioning. The combination of these factors then will have a major influence then on the person who has stepped up to be the caregiver. The caregiver's life can change dramatically, often from day to day, which in turn contributes to stress in the caregiver. This stress can worsen If the caregiver is a long-distance caregiver, which is going to be discussed later in this call by my colleague, it can increase, stress can be increased in certain groups, which we typically do not consider to be caregivers. These groups would be or include men, a spouse, a son, or another family male member. It can be young adults. It can be teens, and sometimes, unfortunately, it can even be our school-aged children. Caregiving to these groups is most likely not a norm for them, so the stress quickly escalates when trying to learn new skills, manage symptoms, manage late effects, or deal with multiple roles such as being the caregiver, the head of the household, the cook, going to school or college, and sometimes even being the patient's personal navigator when dealing with the healthcare system or the patient's team. So in my discussion, I'd like to elaborate a bit more on the caregiver's role related to being the patient's personal health navigator. And Dr. Given talked a little bit about this and said how important it was to involve the patient, the caregiver in any discussion between the patient and the healthcare provider. It's a team approach with that, and it's essential because all of you probably have been aware of the times when maybe you didn't get all the information and then it was hard to get back in touch with the team. So it's good to have everyone involved with any type of communication or visits that are going on. So because of the distinct differences of the stages and the types and the sequela of MM, this is a very key role, very important role. So the goal of this role would be to facilitate communication among the patient, their family, and the healthcare team. Yet in our fast-moving world, it is difficult to maintain communication with each other, just on a simple, friend-to-friend basis, coworker to coworker. So it's even more difficult during this type of experience. So I would propose that a given goal of the caregiver would be to focus on establishing consistent, high-quality communication using different strategies and means of communication. So I'm going to give a few strategies that may be helpful. I hope they'll be helpful in building the type of communication that we just spoke about, consistent and high quality. First, it would be good to schedule a time to speak with a designated team member in between visits. It can be once a week or once a month, depending on which stage of the disease journey your loved one is experiencing. So I believe Dr. Given may have mentioned this, that she said try to select one person on the team that you can go to. Make that person your go-to team. And then if that discussion, if you let them know you're going to be my go-to person, you have been selected. You can also maybe talk a little bit about who will be their backup, because I'm sure that healthcare provider is going to want to take some time off or perhaps be ill, and so it will be good for you to have someone as a backup when those types of situations come up. Also, make use of non-traditional means of communication, and when I mean non-traditional, I mean not using the telephone. So you can ask about the possibility of developing email communication via web-based services or even texting through smartphone with your team members if that's allowed. A very critical, a very important, and very valuable thing is to hold family conferences. These sessions can give other family members an opportunity to get updates on their loved one's progress or to ask questions or to even write their questions down so you, the caregiver slash navigator, can have them for the next visit with the healthcare team. So, and this also gives you the caregiver an opportunity to tell something to everyone so everyone hears the same message. And it saves the time of having to tell each person something by mail, by telephone call, or any other way that you may have to do a one-on-one. So it saves a lot of time, and it will lessen the confusion that might be there. And this is a perfect time during the family conferences for the caregiver to ask for some help in the activities. Delegating responsibilities is very helpful to the caregiver and will lessen the stress or physical symptoms the caregiver may experience, such as fatigue, sleepiness, or other similar effects. And for those of you who maintain employment or work while you're being a full-time caregiver, it would be good to talk with your employer and keep them informed about what your role is as the caregiver, some of your responsibilities, and you might even want to say a little bit about the roller coaster effect there will be in the time you may be away from work or other things that you may need. There may even be times that you'll need to speak maybe with your HR representative and ask about FMLA or flex time options. There's no doubt that being a caregiver can be considered a career in itself. Oftentimes, there may even be feelings of frustration or guilt. For instance, there may be thoughts of, oh, I'm not doing enough, or at times, you know, I'm really tired of doing this. Perhaps there's fear and uncertainty about the changes in the loved one's physical and mental health, and many other thoughts. The combination of these thoughts may contribute to the stress and distress of the caregiver, the family members, and even the patient. So as our previous colleagues just mentioned, over the course of the disease, roles and responsibilities of the caregiver will change. And so as those roles change, the emotional and physical health of the caregiver will also change. So as we heard, MM is a condition that often spans over a long period, which means caring for a patient during our much-loved and anticipated holidays or special occasions such as birthdays or anniversaries. During these times, caregivers may often feel they have to keep up with those wonderful traditions their families have always associated with these celebrations. And like many of us, they often struggle to keep up with the traditions. However, in the midst of preparing for their holidays, the families may also find themselves struggling to keep up with the caregiver activities. So trying to maintain so many roles can be challenging, especially if the caregiver lives with the patient or lives close enough to see their loved one on a daily basis. Well, now that we recognize those challenges and circumstances, what can we do to be proactive caregivers? I'd like to share a few strategies that may be helpful to you when you find yourself in this role. First of all, you may remember to continue learning about this condition and its effects on your loved one, your family, and you as a caregiver. Participation in sessions like this teleconference is an excellent opportunity to increase your knowledge and your awareness of the disease and things that you can do to take care of yourself as a caregiver. I believe that lifelong learning becomes second nature to someone serving as a caregiver in addition to all the other roles that person may have. Secondly, learn to delegate to others in your family. And as a word of caution, when you do decide to delegate, make sure that the person that you're assigning a specific duty to can actually do them, because that would be very hard to give someone a duty and then they're not able to do it. So I think that's important to make sure you're assigning the right thing to the right person. You can identify key roles for family members who wish to be part of the team. For example, there may be a backup person for you as the caregiver. That person may at times need to be the caregiver or the navigator when things happen with you and you're not able to do that. For those of you who do not have family members close, develop a team of care partners. Remember, there are many different interpretations of family and social support networks, and you'd be surprised how often people are so willing to help if we just take a moment to ask. And the other things that I think are very important is be very mindful of your own strengths, skills, and knowledge that are evolving over the course of being a caregiver. And at the same time, acknowledge that your caregiving experience can be quite difficult at times, but your experience can also be quite rewarding the majority of the time. Determine what can realistically be done, so create a stable and realistic role for you as a caregiver. Reflect on your own coping skills, and if needed, seek support from trusted friends or through your minister, support groups, online services such as cancer care, or if needed, train mental health care providers. And my colleague, Ms. Chi, will elaborate on the types of psychosocial support available to you. Set up a social support and safety network, particularly if you are, you know, you work all the time or you have a very erratic schedule. Identify neighbors, friends, or relatives that can help monitor your loved one's condition when you're not there. And during the holidays, celebrations, medical emergencies, and even natural disasters can sometimes occur. So you want to be prepared for those unexpected situations. So one thing you might want to do is know where your closest emergency room center is located. Find out what services are provided by the ER. For example, are they even prepared to care for your loved one? Ask about insurance coverage and other specific details about obtaining services. And be sure and ask about the types of documents that you need to get the services there. Keep a logbook where you record your loved one's medical history, list of allergies, current medication, contact information for your primary oncologist or the cancer center, and keep track of who you speak to and when you speak to them and what the outcome was. It's also important to speak with your team during times of holidays and find out how to contact them. It's challenging to contact our familiar and trusted healthcare team during holidays or when there's natural disasters or any other type of situations like that. So having this information ahead of time will be quite beneficial. Keep those numbers handy. Make copies. You can put them into your mobile devices, your smartphones, your tablets. Be sure and protect those with passwords. And if you do have a hard copy, make sure that you keep a hard copy for yourself. And for those of you who really want to participate in the holidays, and perhaps you really can't be there because maybe they have a certain condition or side effects that doesn't allow them to interact with other folks, set up a web camera so that way people can speak to one another through some of the Skype types of things and similar types of tools that are available for us. Visual communication such as this can give you a great peace of mind. Create new traditions, even if you cannot be there in person. Some of these other activities can become new traditions for you, your loved one, and your family. So if you are the major family event planner or the king or king chef, this is a good time to share the role or hand over the torch, so to speak, to another member of the family. So my final message is to share this. Whether you're a patient, caregiver, or provider, be good to yourself. Keep tabs on your own physical and mental health. Schedule time for yourself to relax. Read a book, take a nap, go for a walk, even try some yoga, meditation, or journaling, or just sit there. Just remind yourself that by taking care of your own health, you and the persons you are caring for will reap the benefits of being a healthy caregiver. So perhaps some of our listeners can share how they maintain their own treasured traditions, celebrations, and holidays. And thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. And Carolyn, this concludes my remarks.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Palos, for your wonderful remarks and actually also for your recommendation to everybody that when we have a second part where we can take questions or comments, that we would very much welcome any of your suggestions or comments in terms of things that you found helpful in terms of coping. So coping with the stresses, we really would love to hear from you as well. And now our next speaker is Maria Chi. And Maria is an oncology social worker. She's clinical supervisor at Cancer Care. And Maria is going to address long-distance caregiving, self-care tips for managing stress, and the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care. It's now my pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Chi.
Thank you, Carolyn. Excuse me. If you live apart from your friend or family member with multiple myeloma, you might not even consider yourself a caregiver, but you are, and even from a distance, there are many important things that you can do for someone with cancer. For example, don't underestimate the importance of just listening to your loved one. A caregiver is someone who provides emotional and not just practical support. You might choose to email, call, or Skype with them, depending on what you both prefer. Simply picking up the phone or sending a text or email lets him or her know that you're there and that you're listening. Any of these methods opens up communication and gives your loved one the chance to pour out their feelings to you. And you listen to them and you take those feelings in. You're like a cup or a container that catches what spills out and overflows, and that helps them feel less overwhelmed. Certainly, it can be hard or uncomfortable to listen to the more negative aspects of what they're saying, but you play a very important role when you let your loved one express difficult feelings. Allowing them to be honest about their experience with cancer might be one of the more valuable things that you can do for them. And you can do this even at a distance using the internet and even some simpler, less glamorous technology like the phone. Another way to show that you're there and thinking about your loved one is to send them cards or small care packages of things that are personally meaningful. These don't have to be expensive or fancy. For example, you could send a shoebox full of photos, inspirational quotes, maybe some ginger candy to help with their nausea. Or a child might send a small toy or a drawing that makes the person smile. Little things like this can go a long way in making a person feel loved and remembered. In addition to listening, you can communicate your loved one's needs to other members of the family or to more formal supports. For example, after talking to your loved one and getting their permission, you might discuss their needs with a hospital social worker, case manager, or another relative who can find resources nearby and arrange various services like home health care. You can help them figure out what questions they might have for each visit with a medical provider. You could be the designated point person for other friends and relatives to contact about news and updates about your loved one. And as you visit with them online or by phone, you can listen for fatigue in their voice, which is one of the more common side effects from treatment. You can consult with a nutritionist and pass on tips for increasing their energy. You can even listen for changes in their tone of voice or their emotions. And you hear them with a fresh perspective, which might be harder for their primary caregiver to do. And sometimes it's better just to listen more than to talk, which you can certainly do by phone. No matter where you live, you can provide structure as a caregiver to your loved one's daily routine by prioritizing some of their tasks. You can help them break things up into more manageable parts. So, for example, you might help organize their bills and determine which need to be paid right away, which can wait. With written permission from your loved one, you can schedule medical appointments and request medical records. You might coordinate the transfer of information among different medical providers. You might help collect and organize some legal, financial, and other important documents. You can organize their friends and relatives into a network or a community of support in order to designate certain people to help out in different ways. And there are organizations that can help you set this up for free online. And for more information about that, please feel free to call our Hope Line, and I'll provide that number at the end. With access to technology, you might research and identify new treatments for multiple myeloma or clinical trials that your loved one can participate in. You can request up-to-date medical information from various organizations, and you can help sort out the accurate versus the inaccurate information. You can help compare doctors and hospitals online, and you can identify financial and practical resources in your loved one's area, or find out if they're eligible for Medicare, Medicaid, or other insurance programs in their state. So a little earlier, you heard me say that caregivers are like cups or containers that catch the overflow of emotions from your loved one, both good and bad. Well, if you're that container, what do you do with all of those feelings? Who do you then spill to? How do you relieve the pressure on yourself? Because whether you're living with your loved one with cancer or caring from a distance, you'll inevitably get stressed out. You might feel guilt, anger, worry, sadness, uncertainty. You probably have multiple responsibilities already, and caregiving, as we heard from my colleagues, can be a full-time job in itself. It does have an impact on your physical and emotional well-being. Most of you have probably heard of the analogy of the oxygen mask on the airplane. Who gets it first, the adult or the child? And the answer is the adult, in order to then put it on the child. You can't take care of your loved one if you're not well enough yourself. So how do you take care of yourself? Well, you first can remind yourself that you're not alone. You can join a support group to meet other caregivers or consider professional counseling. Maintain those friendships and relationships that are valuable and positive. Connecting to other loved ones can help re-energize you. And whether you're visiting or living with your loved one, plan something fun, plan some enjoyable activities, not just the medical ones. At the same time, honor a sense of balance by carving out time just for you for a reflective solitude. Other ways to re-energize yourself are by maintaining a healthy diet, regular exercise, sleeping well as possible each night. You might engage in deep breathing, relaxation, or meditation exercises. Keep your own medical appointments and pay attention to the signs that your own body is sending you about your health. Channel what inspires you, nature, music, writing, art, and allow time for your own personal growth. Even if these things are in very small increments of time, an hour, 15 minutes, 5 minutes a day, they are worthwhile and valuable. Take time off, a small vacation, a long weekend, or maybe a more formal extended leave from work. Live in the moment, taking care of what you need to do, but allow yourself to look forward to some breaks too. Find some respite care, whether this be through an organization or informally, by asking a friend or family member to take over some of your duties for a day or two. Allow your loved one with multiple myeloma to do some things for themselves, whatever they're able and willing to do. This helps them to retain a sense of control and independence in their lives, and it gives you some rest. Be creative and flexible while trying to structure and organize your days as much as possible. Remember that things won't always go as planned, and you can't control everything, so do allow yourself to laugh. And finally, recognize your own limits as well as your strengths. Give yourself credit for all the things that you can do, but say no to requests from other people, to unreasonable demands on your time, to perfection. Even say no to yourself when needed. And I do invite people during the Q&A period to tell us what you do to take care of yourself and how you manage stress in your lives. And finally, talking to a cancer care social worker can help you get the support that you need, create some balance in your life, and help relieve some of the stress of caregiving. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed master's level social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. Our short-term counseling services by phone or in person in the New York area can help people manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that come with the diagnosis and caregiving. Cancer Care also offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other caregivers who may truly understand your experience in a way that no one else can. Certainly, caring for someone with multiple myeloma can have a significant impact on your finances. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation, home care, child care, or pain medication. While we can't resolve all the problems that you're facing every day, a cancer care social worker provides a listening ear and the ability to counsel you as you navigate the caregiving experience. So please do contact us at our helpline at 1-800-813-4673 or log on to our website at cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support for caregivers. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Chi. That was a wonderful presentation and a lot of excellent suggestions for people. And also, of course, now we have time for our Q and we have time for comments or for questions. And so I'm going to ask Sam to explain to you how to queue up for questions. But before she does that, I just want to say that you can either ask a question or you, as all of you as participants, may have some really helpful suggestions that you might like to offer each other of things that you have found helpful to yourselves in coping with the stresses of caregiving. So please do use this opportunity to give share with us a kind of brief suggestions on your own that might have helped as well. So actually, I'm going to ask Sam to explain to you how to do either of those two things, and we look forward to your comments. Sam?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question or a suggestion, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking on the Ask a Question button. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone.
We have a comment from one of our, actually a question from one of our online participants. I read online that body language is important as a caregiver. Is that true? If so, what are body language do's and don'ts as a caregiver? Dr. Palos, would you like to address that one?
Yes, I would. I got this visual while you were stating the question, and the visual was of someone standing up while they're caring for a loved one, tapping their foot, rolling their eyes around, and having their arms crossed. Those would definitely be some signs of body language saying, maybe I'm not too happy with this role right now. So one of the things that is always helpful, and we do this even in our clinics here, we always advise that when someone goes into a room or when you're going to speak with someone, just sit down. You know, I mean, if you can sit down, it really changes the relationship, because when someone is standing up and the other person is sitting or lying down, it gives an impression almost like you're at the principal's office. You know, you have someone staring at you. It's almost a power structure, so to speak. So to make that person feel more comfortable or to even out that relationship a bit more, if the person can sit down and just face each other, that makes a lot of difference with body language. Just that whole presence of coming in, sitting down, and saying, okay, that opens it up. It's a very inviting type of body language, saying, I'm ready to listen to you. So those would be some of the brief ones. I'm not sure if my colleagues have a few others that they want to bring in.
Well, it's excellent. Did anyone want to add to that? Dr. Given, Ms. Chi, Dr. Yi, anyone want to add to that as well?
I can add to that, Carolyn. I do think that certainly body language is important in any interaction and any communication that you have with someone, and especially as a caregiver, as Dr. Palo suggested, to convey that you're open and receptive and, relaxed as possible and invite the other person to be honest about their concerns and what they're going through is very helpful, so that you're not closing yourself off unintentionally by crossing your arms or frowning or anything like that. You do want to certainly open yourself up to their communication and just be mindful of maybe expressions on your face that you don't realize or, you know, are certainly that you're conveying all the time, and sort of be more mindful of how you look to the person who might be trying to communicate something very important to you.
That's a good point, because actually most people probably don't really know. It's hard to know how you look when you're responding. We don't walk around with a mirror always looking at how we're looking when we're responding to somebody. And so it's really quite challenging. And what about our voice tone? Do we include that in body language? As I was listening to this, I thought, so body language, what about voice tone? Is that, Dr. Given, do you want to comment on that as well?
Voice tone. I think voice tone is important, and remember that you're a family member. So as I was thinking about the body language, if you're a family member and you're used to sitting beside someone, if you stand above them, because now you're trying to give meds or something, that gives a whole different idea. The same thing with medication. If you're giving medication, you should think of a way to step by the person that you don't look like a doctor or nurse or whatever, trying to say, okay, you've got to take this medication now, but you're a family member who you're trying to assist them. So I think trying to remember that you are still a family member as you interact is really, really critical.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, that's an excellent question. Thank you. That was good answers here. Okay, so one of our other online participants has a question. And the question is, as a caregiver, how can I manage my own stress and depression while taking care of a loved one with cancer? What are practical hands-on ideas to make caregiving easier? So, Dr. Given, would you like to try that one?
Well, it would be nice to say that one could make caregiving easier. I don't think there's any magic bullet as far as that, because it is very hard work. But I do believe that one can do it with less stress and distress if one asks for help and seeks help and keeps thinking about taking care of themselves. We've talked a couple times today about the importance of respite, the importance of taking a break. I think the support groups, I think social work, there's online support groups. I think if you really continue to have difficulty over a long period of time, that does not get any less, so that you really feel really, really depressed. I think it's important to seek whoever you go to that would refer you to counseling, or themselves could provide counseling. Sometimes it's ministers, again, it's social work. Sometimes it's psychologists. Sometimes it could even be a psychiatrist if it's really a problem. But I think you can't let distress get too bad in the caregiving role, because we know that depression and anxiety, for example, interfere with the ability to make good decisions or to really be alert to a change that's occurring. So taking care of yourself in the emotional realm and mental health realm is just as important as the physical, if not more important, because it affects the decision making.
Excellent. And anyone else want to add to that? Or totally excellent. Okay.
I would just like to add just one thing. I'm sorry. I think some of that sadness, or not so much the depression, but feeling blue, feeling a loss of your former life, that can lead to some grieving. And so some of that is going to be a normal process. And so it's important to say and acknowledge, okay, I feel sad, I feel blue, I miss those wonderful times that we used to have. And, you know, it's like Dr. Given was just saying, you know your own coping mechanisms. And if you realize that, you know, this has been going on for a while, or this is the worst I've ever felt, that's the time. That's like a red alert for you. You know, that says, I need to get someone to help me. And you don't have to go immediately to, you know, there's so many different people out there that will be willing to help, a minister,
a friend, even if you just want to talk to a friend, and then that friend can perhaps give you some advice on where to go. Because some people sometimes have a little bit of reluctance to go to a health professional or to talk to someone that they don't know. But sometimes you can find some safety and a lot of relief in that. If you don't know someone, you can open up to them much easier. So you can use online services or telephone calls for that. And going to a trained health professional, you'll know when there's a time that, you know, this is not getting better, I need help. That's when you need to go and seek the help from a trained health professional, and hopefully before you get to that point.
So. Excellent point. And Maria, do you want to comment on that as well in terms of just getting help when you feel like you need to go to a healthcare professional?
Sure, absolutely. I think just to underscore the importance of sort of letting yourself off the hook of having to do all of it and be responsible for all of the care, both practical and emotional. So even if you are the person who's really providing all of the practical support and physical care to someone, does not mean that you have to handle all of the emotional impact of that on your own. And someone outside of your immediate network, such as a healthcare professional, can be very helpful in sort of reminding you of that and helping to identify ways for you to, you know, get other help from people, and when can you, and who can I ask, and what can they help me with, and even honestly, if you have no one else in your personal life that you can really share that burden with, then the healthcare professional is someone that you can do that with for sure.
And there are lots of places that you can simply, you know, pick up the phone and call, and you may not have, some of you may live in areas that it's very hard to travel somewhere. It may be really difficult for you to get, you know, long distance to someplace, and so there are many services now that are available by telephone or online, and professional services, so you can just call someone and talk to them on an as-needed basis, and that can be very helpful as well. We have another question from one of our participants online as well. My wife was very recently diagnosed and is still having trouble accepting this diagnosis. Many times I feel like she's in denial. What can I do to help her? Maria, would you like to comment on that?
Sure. You know, it's understandable that it's probably, it comes as a shock, and it's overwhelming to try to absorb this new information. I think it's important not to rush someone and try to force them to accept something sooner than they're able to. So to try to be as gentle as possible with someone in terms of introducing new information and helping them kind of accept the reality of that. And that's something that you can consult with, you know, with a healthcare professional about as well. That can be helpful in terms of how to communicate to your loved one about that. So try not to force them into the reality of this. Try to meet them where they're at. And you probably know best in terms of how she normally reacts to new and you know, very difficult events or things in her life. So how does she usually cope with these things? And to help her use some of those strategies in this situation.
Thank you. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been really extraordinary. And I want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education workshop and that we recognize that you will have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. And I do want to remind you that some of you did ask really very poignant questions that we addressed in part, but to some extent, do please call Cancer Care for a further discussion, for your own personal, more discussion for you. And you can speak with one of our trained oncology social workers at 1-800-813-4673. The number is 1-800-813-4673. And you can talk with one of our trained oncology social workers here, and they can really help you with some of your concerns and questions. Most importantly, as we conclude today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with multiple myeloma or with cancer. As a caregiver, as a person living with this, with multiple myeloma, I want you to know that you're part of this community of support, and we're here to help you. So I want to thank you all for participating, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This does conclude the workshop. You may disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.